My name is Sohail Essa, and joined with me in the studio today is a interesting guest, a friend of mine. We studied together, studied with all of us, actually, and he is now currently a registrar in the field of plastic surgery. Our guest today, let's give him a big round of applause, Bordi Chakraborty.
How's it, guys? Good to be here.
Bordi?
Obviously, you do a majority of that type of work in state because that's what's there.
Yeah. Mm.
And also because cosmetic one, I would assume, is very expensive in state. And it's also all elective.
Yeah.
There's no cosmetic that's an emergency.
Exactly.
Everybody chooses, oh, I want my breasts reduced or bigger. Mm. So how do you guys get training for cosmetic surgery?
So that's the thing. So, and it is an ethical question. Like, you have this long list of cosmetic cases, there's trauma cases. So how can you then justify doing like a facelift or a bleph? So these are difficult questions, and it does limit the amount of cosmetic time we get.
And quickly, just to interject there, would you get patients that literally are just coming to you and saying, I want a cosmetic facelift? Or is it patients that have had like a cheek cancer or something?
So
like
sometimes
that?
So in our setting, the best, you can combine the two. So someone who's got like a facial nerve palsy, you can then do a facelift on those patients. So you then learn the training on how to do it, but in a patient that needs it in a more emergency kind of setting.
I see what you mean.
We wouldn't do a completely elective cosmetic facelift in government. I don't think.
Yeah, like someone just saying, like, if Kanye Bao walked into battle. Yeah. So what she did was she said, I want to look like a cat.
She said,
and then
that.
The plastic surgeon apparently took out her eyelids. That's what she said in her. Now, I don't know whether that's possible.
But explain that though, buddy. What does it mean?
I think
a lid lift?
Probably just a bleph, right?
Like, she didn't describe it the right way.
You can do an upper and lower lid, like. You can do a bleph.
So basically, it is pull them back, basically.
Yeah, you're cutting a piece of tissue out and then stitching it up.
And then stitching it.
It's basically that. So to make it as simple as like you're taking pieces of skin out and then stitching it. With as little
like
tension
pulling
as possible.
It tighter.
Like blepharoplasty, right?
So like a blepharoplasty,
People have like epicanthic folds and like people have overlapping like mongoloid things. You can fix that.
Exactly, yeah.
But now, Bordi, doesn't it take away from you training as a specialist? And once you're qualified, there's now things that society and the world of today demands, but you're not necessarily trained in it because I would like to see, and I think we need to start having our plastic surgeons trained at Barra and Joburg Gen in BBLs. We need to start doing BBLs at Barra.
Who's going to pay for these BBLs?
They need to fly to Barra, come out with a BBL, because then Bordi can train. Because now when you graduate, you've never done a BBL.
I think we're lucky that we also get a variety of like pathology or diseases that's expose us to the fundamentals. So like you get patients that are on ARVs that have lipodystrophy. It's like the big dorsal humps or in general, like lipo, that's fat that's deposited in areas that are non-aesthetic.
Yeah, which is one of the side effects, just so that they understand.
Exactly. Which a lot of our patients are obviously, our population. Mm. So those are patients that we then do liposuction on.
So you're learning how to do it.
No, exactly. So we are, again, like we're learning how to do it, but in a setting where it's still warranted and you're not doing a purely cosmetic.
So I get patients with very large breasts and they'll say, you know,
gigantomastia.
Yes. Right. They'll come and explain that their breasts are really big and it's causing them problems, back pain, and they can't work well, you know. And you do those operations, those breasts for those patients.
So I've done plastics for about like half a year now, and a BBR is probably like the thing that I've done the most.
Breast reduction.
Breast reductions, So it is something we do, and it is warranted. It's debilitating. So it is an issue. And the other thing I think we don't, because I've coming from Gen Surg, it's very much like life or limb kind of thing. To people saying like, this is like causing me like psychological issues. I'm constantly fatigued. These are things that you also need to like take into consideration. It's not just like
100%. It's not just. Can you imagine carrying out two watermelons?
Exactly.
So some of these women have like breasts to their knees.
I had a lady say with G cups, like just
G cups.
Yeah, so it's absolutely warranted.
So A B C D E F.
So wait, no,
that's what eight, eight the eighth.
Yeah. But essentially, you create a strut out of foam so that he's got a 24/7 boner. Patient had necrotizing fasciitis of the groin spread to his penis.
What?
As we understand it, an infection of the groin area. It can be anywhere, but of the groin area in your case.
Mm. Yeah. So we're talking about a very mobile area here.
Yes. It grows and gets small.
The thing is, like, if a patient's asleep, like, you can't really control how you're going to move. So whatever you do has to be, like, dynamic and consider everyday life.
Yes. Yeah.
So the simple thing is, obviously, you just put in a catheter. So you obviously want to prevent the patient from peeing on it.
Yes. Yeah,
so that'll obviously cause infections.
How did you get him erect? That's what I'm going to know.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Six South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive men's healthcare. Today, join us in the studio is our esteemed guest, Ofense. And I don't know his surname because he never told me.
Boloko.
Boloko.
Ofense Boloko.
But I'm really excited for this episode. I'll be honest. We've been trying to get a bodybuilder on this show. And I know that you don't like being called a bodybuilder. You call yourself an athlete. You're athletic. I'm keen to get into, let's talk everything fitness from diet, exercise plans, you know, your journey through fitness, and then thereafter potentially competing in a competition, what that takes.
Yeah.
Let's dive straight into it. Welcome, Ofense Boloko.
Eta Ofense.
Tell us, just give us quickly brief, where you come from, what's your background, how do you get into this, and yeah, let's just chat.
Okay, so I was born in Pretoria. First and foremost, thank you so much for having me on the show and
to the viewers out there, thank you. I hope you guys
will enjoy it. I was born in Pretoria, raised in the Eastern Cape. I went to a traditional boys' school called Salvon College, as Dr. Matthews would know, college boys. Yeah. And then I think through my high school days, I sort of like fell in love with my ability to sort of like having that natural athletic ability, and in the sense that I would participate in athletics, I'd play rugby, you know, and I was like, okay, you know what, I actually have a thing for this. But the question that always crossed my mind was, could I actually make a career out of this? And I was very fortunate, you know, in my senior years of high school, I sort of like was given an opportunity to play rugby professionally. And I pursued a career in professional rugby at the Sharks, where I also studied marketing. I played their junior level for about 2 years and later signed with the Southern Kings on a senior contract. And I played my senior rugby there for almost 6 years, moved to Port Elizabeth. And yeah, that's basically how my journey started in terms of sport and being active. And yeah, this is where I am now.
So rugby was the foundation?
The foundation, correct.
And then thereafter, what made you choose bodybuilding and the other fitness, let's say, aspects? Where did that come from?
So I noticed I had a natural ability to be able to do any sport, whether it's sprinting, like I said, playing rugby, or let alone exercising. And the way my body would respond to exercise was unbelievable. And people ask me, listen, what do you do? How's your diet? How do you train? And I'm like, I train just like everybody else. But for me, I was very fortunate. People used to say I've got good genetics.
Yeah.
But I mean, despite having good genetics, one has to apply themselves in terms of training and diet. So, and I think with knowing that I have that advantage, that's how I went into bodybuilding. Because then now with competing against guys who have been training for 10 years and with myself having trained for 2 years, I'd still be able to outperform some of those guys.
Wow.
So that's when I realized, okay, you know what? I've got a thing for this. And as much as it's bodybuilding, I don't like that term bodybuilding. I feel like it's really limited in terms of my ability. I prefer being called athletic because I can still sprint. And as big as I am, I can still sprint.
I mean, that's me and Ofense went to the same school, but believe it or not, I was also a sprinter at high school.
Wait, did you know him? Or you didn't?
Yeah.
We
were boys at school.
Were you guys in the same class? Like, yeah.
You're a year below me.
Yeah. You're 1 year my senior.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, he arrived at high school, and what I really admired, firstly, arrived and challenged me in the sprinting and beat me. I was like, okay, there's this guy.
So wait, you were a sprinter?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you probably won because of long legs.
Daddy long legs. Daddy long legs.
He comes and he dethrones me from sprinting. I'm like, okay, sharp. But what I really admired about you is that you see a lot in high school how kids will come through primary, grade 8, grade 9, they still got it. But as life and teenagehood hits them and they start, you know, adolescence, they choose other paths, you know, and don't focus on that. But you focused on your athleticism right into matric, you know, and you stuck with it. And that's what got you those contracts in professional. And would I be right in saying that sort of was the foundation of your mindset to say, I stick to this. This is discipline. Because I'm sure discipline is very important when it comes to being an athletic person, whether it's bodybuilding, sprinting. How difficult was it to maintain that discipline when there's peer pressure, when there's what is the things we used to do, dives on a Friday, and you know?
Yeah.
How was it, just that discipline?
I think for me, what I realized was sort of understanding the responsibility that I have upon myself and the path that I've chosen in terms of not being like everybody else. Because it's very easy to say, listen, I want to pursue a career in rugby athletics, but to be disciplined in terms of your diet, to be disciplined in terms of your training, to make sure that you're sleeping, to make sure that you are getting the proper training, it takes a lot of time and commitment, a lot of financial resources. And I think that is something I told myself, you know, I can make a career out of this. And I mean, I'm also into fitness right now. I'm not sure if you mentioned that. I'm also a fitness and health personal trainer as well. So I teach people to be healthy. So it's not just me being active, but I practice what I preach, and I like to also teach people how to live a healthy, sustainable life.
You also mentioned like genetics. I think it's a kind of controversial topic. People would say, if you don't have genetics, you should not don't bother bodybuilding. But maybe we can just explain a bit of genetics. So it's like you could have a normal, like a muscle, right, with a long tendon and a short muscle body. It doesn't matter how big you do, whatever you do, you won't look aesthetic, right? And I think he's also blessed with amazing genetics, so it gives him the motivation and discipline to fulfill his genetic potential, right?
So are you saying that us who don't have genetics?
That's actually something that I was going to ask, is like, do you feel like there are some people who shouldn't pursue bodybuilding? Like, you could look good, you could achieve, at your best potential, you could look really great, but you'll never be able to step on stage and compete against
them. I think we should show a diagram of like what a long tendon and a short muscle body looks like.
We'll definitely get that,
So as you've mentioned, genetics do play a big role. But as one, you need to also understand, not all of us can be bodybuilders, not all of us can be athletes. But in terms of the best of what your body can do, you could probably push your body to a certain limit where you can achieve a certain physique, or let alone attain a certain athletic ability. I mean, I started boxing quite late in my career, and believe it or not, as big as I am, I can move.
Yeah.
You know, and that's obviously now my fast twitch fibers. You know, that's another thing we need to look at as well, that people don't realize that to also try and maintain being athletic, there's certain muscle fibers that you need to fire and stimulate as an athlete. I mean, I know bodybuilding is a lot of slow twitch muscle fibers, but when you start sprinting, the more athletic, that's more your fast twitch fibers. So I was very fortunate to be able to manipulate both of them and not have a problem, you know? And then I think, you also mentioned that with people who are slightly taller, yes, it will be a little bit more difficult for them to put on muscle because their body types are ectomorph. So you get mesomorph, endomorph, and ectomorph. Yeah. But in terms of them being able to lose weight and have a quicker metabolism, they'll have a better advantage when it comes to maybe running and sprinting. Whereas your mesomorphs and your endomorphs, they're more bulkier type of people who can put on muscle easily, but they're not as mobile, you know, so it's different body types.
Maybe you can like give an example so people can imagine it. Like Eddie Hall, like this guy who's fat, right? But he's also really strong.
He's one of the like world's strongest man. Also does boxing now. He's pulled a 500 kilo deadlift. I think he holds the world record now
He's an endomorph, right? Then you have guys like
So endomorphs are guys that generally are much bigger, fatter. They hold a lot more muscle and fat and water. on their bodies. Mm-hmm. But it gives them the advantage of strength and power.
Ridiculous strength.
Then you have mesomorphs like Ronnie Coleman, you know, him.
And also
Sensei.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and then ectomorphs would be like, the one I think is like,
tall and skinny. Like, I personally, like, I would consider myself an endomorph. When I was in high school, really fat, I went through a journey of initially because my dad was very much into endurance. Mm. So like long distance running, sprinting, triathlon type things. He kind of got me into that. And that together with sport helped me lose a lot of weight. Mm. But then as I was approaching matric, I looked at myself and I'm like, but I have no muscle. Mm. Like, so I'm looking like skinny fat, that makes sense, right? Yeah. So you're skinny, you're not really heavy, but then you're like fat. You know, you like have that sagging waist and whatever.
Bubble. Yeah, yeah.
And it was only in matric when I actually started weight training and putting on some muscle where I realized this is the thing that can also improve my fat loss.
Mm. Yes.
But I know that, like, myself being an endomorph and many people in my family and others I know, for me the best diet that I've ever been on was one where I cut carbs a lot, and that helped me like maintain a fairly low percentage body fat. But if I let go of my diet, no matter how much I train, it does not matter how much I could be doing twice a day cardio weights, if I just let go and eat whatever I want at any time, and you know, excessive calorie intake, I know I will just balloon. Sure. Whereas maybe somebody like Brendan, if he binges 24/7,
I'm always eating. At work, they already know me. When I arrive eating, after the morning meeting, I'm looking for food. Then at lunch, I'm eating. Uh-huh. But then, I mean, I gain weight. Look, at school, I weighed 69 kgs. Imagine at my height. Now I weigh 85.
Sure.
I've done something, you know, but it's taken about 12 years, you know, of eating. And then gym, you know, here and there. I wanna come, we've been having a debate.
I mean, just before we do, I think on the topic, so he's an ectomorph, I'm an endomorph. Nas, what do you consider yourself?
Ecto.
So also very more on the skinny side, right? Yeah. You would consider yourself a mesomorph.
Because I can lose weight easily and I can gain weight easily.
So you're that perfect middle ground.
You know,
and would you say that most bodybuilders are mesomorphs? The ones that really do well are mesomorphs.
Mainly your shorter guys do well. Your shorter, stockier guys, because they can pack on so much muscle on their frame. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And despite them standing against much taller guys who have muscle mass, they just look freakish. Because with bodybuilding, it's more than
proportions.
Just proportions, it's symmetry, it's muscle conditioning, it's also having that freak factor, that's like, wow.
You know, that's when you're looking at maybe like the open category.
Open category.
So
where the guys are like 120 kilos above.
Like Samson Dauda just won the Olympia. Did you see the picture that he posted of him like in 2012?
When he was 2011, smaller.
When he was small.
It was a 10-year transformation.
Do you think was he an ectomorph, mesomorph in that picture? Because he tripled or quadrupled in size, you know?
So I think he was definitely an ectomorph because he's quite a tall guy.
Yeah,
you know, we can pull up
and
that
for
picture.
Him to be able to put on muscle mass, he did over.
What's his name
years
again?
Span.
Just so that she can pull
Samson,
up the
Samson Dauda, D-A-U-D-A.
And with him having put on so much muscle over 10 years, is kind of sustainable in a way. But you must remember now, there's diet, there's nutrition. And there's also working with your doctor, which I think we will touch into a little bit later.
We'll close on that.
And bro, science.
Who's the doctor? Is the doctor in the locker room?
The coach.
And I mean, to get to his level as well, it's not, and it looks like an individual sport, but listen, it's actually a team sport. You have your personal trainer.
So this is a picture here of Samson Dauda at the Olympia.
Currently.
But maybe we can pull up the one of him in 2012.
Yeah, wow. He posted that. But I think Samson Dauda is beautiful, man. I really do. But I want to get to this debate. I'm itching. We need to clear up something here.
Yeah.
Because we are like on this. Mm. We're trying to bodybuild, you know, the two ectomorphs.
Yeah.
And the endomorph.
And the endomorph. We're trying to build muscle.
Yeah.
Right. But now, as you would know, out there, you're a personal trainer.
Of course.
You have clients who believe in you and in your methods. And then you have other people who teach other methods, right? Mm-hmm. So Nas over there has this like insane belief that Mike Mensah is the be all.
Now, I want Nassim to explain.
Explain what the is the theory Mike of Mike
Mensah? Are you familiar with Mike Mensah?
Mike Mensah, yes.
Okay, and his training methods. Nassim, I want you to explain the theory behind Mike Mensah and his training methods.
Okay,
and
let's,
I
want let's, Mensah first, to weigh let's in first on take this. It back all the way long time ago to Arnold and Arnold and Mike Mensah.
Yeah, the golden age. The golden age of bodybuilding. Right?
Yeah. So, the idea was that. There's two theories, right? There's Arnold's theory and Mike Mensah's theory, and they each had their coach, right?
Mm.
I can't remember the names of those two coaches, right? But basically, the ideal was encapsulated by Arnold or Mike Mensah. And Arnold, he had that whole thing of gym every day, five days a week, you know,
like twice a day,
high volume, right?
Yeah.
The idea is high volume, high intensity. Mike Mensah had the idea that you should do low volume but very high intensity, right? And the thing is that, like, the idea is super compensation, right? I need to have a graph, guys. I need a graph of super compensation. What happens is you cause damage to your muscle, right?
Of course.
And then what happens is that there's a deficit that happens, right? Now you have to wait for the deficit to reheal. Then that's where muscle growth happens, right? If you keep on gymming all the time, you accumulate fatigue in your body, right? There's also CNS fatigue, so your muscles are not going to...
Central nervous system
fatigue. So it's not like you can gym one part of your body and then gym somewhere else and think that you're doing only once a week each part, but it's basically a whole systemic response, right? And the idea is that what causes muscle growth is a CNS stimulation with your muscle fibers and your muscle, it's complicated, but your muscle spindles, right? Muscle spindle fibers, right? These things stimulate the muscle growth, right? Yeah. They tell the muscles, look, I'm under strain.
Grow.
When they feel that thing, they say, okay, I'm under a lot of tension. I need to grow. Mm. And that's what grows. It's not the idea of, we think about muscle growth as you make a tear and then it heals a tear. Then you make another tear, right? So that's how bone grows, right? That's how bone heals and remineralizes. Your muscle is not a bone, right? It doesn't need damage and then healing. It needs each muscle cell to experience the stress, and then it grows in size. You don't actually grow like that much muscle cells or muscle fibers, right? It's actually just those fibers.
I think just to define that. Yeah. It just gets, you don't get more muscle.
Yeah.
What happens is that muscle hypertrophies or gets bigger. Right?
Yeah,
just so that people understand, you're born with a set number of muscles, and that bundle of muscle, whether it be in your biceps or your pecs, that muscle just hypertrophies, gets bigger.
So he says that in order to achieve what everything is explaining is that you walk into the gym and you push the bench press 3 reps and you go out.
Wait,
and
but the most important point is...
Let him explain.
You have to achieve complete muscle failure, right?
Okay.
You have to stress it so badly that you could not even do another set if you wanted to, right?
Okay.
And the guys the proper examples is actually, who's that guy who came second in the classic physique?
This year. Oh, the Spaniard, the Spanish guy. He's from Spain, I thought.
Yeah. So him,
I'm supposed to know this.
He's one of them, right? And even Dorian Yates, right? And Mike Mensah. All of these guys, they do that. High intensity, low volume. So, I mean, if they, these muscle volume guys,
so
monsters
how
Arnold in their
still
times.
Big offensive?
Yeah, that's very interesting because I know... Arnold was a workaholic, first of all. He took no days off. But I think also his genetics and his body's ability to recover, unlike other people, and, you know, maybe having the right nutrition in place and maybe getting proper guidance from his doctor. Because you must remember, let's play open cards, guys.
Mm.
To look like that is unrealistic, right? Mm. And I say this... You know, I'm not pointing any fingers to anyone, but there are performance enhancing drugs. And this is a reality that we need to open ourselves up to. That when it comes to not bodybuilding as such, but generally sports, there are performance enhancing drugs one can use. Performance enhancing drugs for maybe your oxygen intake, performance enhancing drugs maybe to boost strength, performance enhancing drugs to maybe put on muscle, performance enhancing drugs to maybe help you heal from an injury. So
peptides,
there we go. You know, so we need to realize that times have changed and technology has changed and people's awareness regarding what's out there has also changed. So yes, it's seen as a big taboo, when you talk about PEDs, because I think the most street name that we commonly expose to is steroids. But it's a science that has been with us for many years.
Yeah.
However, the sport that really gave it its exposure was probably bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Mm.
And that's the reality of it.
Although it's used in 100% every sport. 100%,
yes. Mm.
You know? Yeah. And people try to say, you know, the golden era of bodybuilding, the guy Serge Olivier before Arnold, yeah. He also used PEDs.
Is that Serge Noubre?
No.
Serge Olivier.
Before Arnold. Mm-hmm. So I was watching something, you know, where does the history of steroid use come? Mm. And people think that those guys were clean. Arnold says he used. Serge used.
All of them talk about their use.
I think the only guy who wasn't was the first Mr. Olympia, I forget his name. But the first one in the 50s. That is the first guy.
Yeah.
But that shows.
But I mean,
how
if you look at that guy's physique, that guy is very average in today's day and age.
It's been going on for almost 80 years that 100%. These things have been here. And, you know, now it's just coming out into the mainstream.
Mm. But before we touch on that, I think let's just explore this idea of Mike Mensa and his workout theories versus what the conventional is. So what do you suggest? So the conventional is train every day or do what they call the bro split.
Bro split.
Arms, chest, shoulders, back, legs. 5 days a week, you're done. 2 rest days, you split them in between, you're good. Maybe variations of that, push-pull legs, whatever the variation is. But train as much as you can, as hard as you can, for as long as you can. Whereas what Nassim is suggesting is follow Mike Mensa's theory, which is train really hard for a very short period of time, high intensity, and then give your body enough time to rest. How much would you say is a reasonable rest time before your next workout?
Like if you gym max three days a week.
Okay.
That's what Mike Mensa preaches, and that's what Nassim believes, and we all oppose to him because that's not what we know as conventional.
But here's the thing: like you say that, but then you've gymmed that way for how many years? You've not seen results.
What? Hey, listen, I'm not a fat guy. I've seen some results. Okay. But I get what you mean.
But I'm saying try Mike Mensa's way, right?
Okay, but do you think Mike Mensa didn't use PEDs at all?
No, the thing is, all of them have. The thing is, look, we're talking about naturals now, right?
Yeah.
In terms of naturals, like I've tried that Arnold way. We've been gymming
everyone is Arnold way, bro.
Been doing that for years, and only when I started using Mike Mensa's
I definitely know that for his physique, specifically his physique, after he started doing that and religiously doing it for a few months, I did definitely see a change.
Mm.
But I want to know what's your opinion, what's your thoughts on the you know that in that long recovery periods, the really intense. I'm talking about like I did one workout with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it maybe lasted 30 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
And yes, I was pretty bust. Maybe I could have done a little bit more. I don't know, maybe. But it was a very intense, high intensity. I think we did like, for example, we started off with, it was a chest workout, a push workout.
Yeah.
So generally it's a push-pull legs routine. And it's 3 days, that's it. That's all he does for 30 minutes. And we started off with a chest press. And the chest press was 2 sets.
Sure.
The first one was just a warm-up, and then the 2 were working sets.
Okay.
And literally, as much as I could push, for as many reps as I could push, and then failure, and then the forced concentric, would help me up with the eccentric, and then the concentric, the slow lowering.
To failure again,
and then a static hold at the end.
To failure.
And at that point, I was pretty bust. And then moving on to the other exercises, but that's the theory. So 2 like really hard working sets. The rest is just warm up before and go for it. What's your opinion?
This is actually going to blow your mind because I agree with his theory because I train one muscle group once a week, believe it or not. And I take 2 days off in a week. And a lot of people don't believe this, but most coaches I've worked with in the past, the bodybuilding gurus till this day, even my current trainer right now, he can attest that Offense trains chest once a week or biceps once, but the growth that I get, and I don't get my growth necessarily from the training, but from the recovery phase of it. Bro, I promise you, and you must remember, training is not about spending 30 minutes and you're out there or spending 4 hours. It's about the quality of the session, but most importantly, the intensity of the session.
Mm.
That's what promotes change or body stimulation in the body. The more pressure you put your body under during a workout or whether training, the better the results will be. But most importantly, the recovery phase is just as important, because if you don't recover, first of all, you're putting your body under a lot of stress. Your cortisol levels are pushing up. You're going to be fatigued. If you're not resting, you won't be able to push your body to its maximum full potential. Mm. So I really like Mike Mensah. When he came out, I was like, wow, this guy sounds like me. Not entirely, but I agree with his concept.
So were you doing this that type of workouts before he came?
And I didn't even know. Yes. Oh, okay. Very similar. So, like, rest. And I think, and I don't want to say genetics now. This is just now from what I've done over the years.
Yeah.
With rugby athletics and with doing classic physique now. Because with classic physique, it's all about symmetry, proportions.
Similar to Arnold. So 100%. What Arnold did, yeah.
Rest has probably been the biggest key to success in terms of my overall physique. Stronger, got better muscle density, I'm not as exhausted, and the quality of muscle that I build generally is just incredible. Whereas when I used to play rugby, we used to run a lot, we used to do field work in the morning, then gym, then off to the field. Your body never got enough time to recover. Though you were losing weight, you were breaking the body down most of the time.
So do you feel like some of that rugby training is overtraining? Like, or do you feel like that's necessary to build you and, for that sport?
I think for that particular sport, considering that rugby goes on for about 80 minutes,
yeah,
correct?
80 minutes.
That's endurance, that's stamina, that's speed, that's physicality.
Yeah.
You know, there's different aspects of it that tie it all in together. Yeah. So you probably would need to put your body under a lot of stress, because on the field, the game is like so quick.
Mm.
Whereas with bodybuilding, I'd probably say recovery. So Mike Mensah would probably be my ideal guy. There's nothing wrong with Arnie. It worked for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he won how many Arnolds? Yeah.
Seven.
Mm. And I mean,
Arnolds, I don't think it was called Arnold.
Oh, sorry, Olympia, sorry, excuse me.
The Olympia, yeah.
You know, but I mean, he was the first guy to really put the Olympia out there.
Yeah.
You know, with his physique. And he's Bulgarian. Is he Bulgarian?
Austrian.
Austrian. So, yeah, man. And yeah, and besides wanting to just build muscle, guys, it's more important to be healthy than just wanting to build muscle.
And
this is something I preach all the time.
100%.
And my clients come to me sometimes like, Ofense, I want a big chest. Ofense, I want a snatched waist.
Mm.
Ofense, I want to look like a baddie. And I'm like, I can get you there.
Wait, they listen, can ask you there.
They ask you that. They want to look like a baddie. Yeah. What's a baddie physique?
I have the most interesting career. But for me, I'm like, yes, I can get you there, but let's focus on getting you healthy.
Yes.
Because when you're healthy and fit, you feel good.
Yeah, of course.
You start to reason and think better. You know, you start to see life differently because your body is as sort of like you evolving in a way in terms of being how your whole body works, you know, how you sort of see life. And I mean, there's nothing better than having a great workout, and the endorphins, the rush is unbelievable.
The rush.
And I think that's why a lot of the people who run, because I never understand why people do long distance running. No offense to anyone. Because you're running yourself, you're running yourself to exhaustion. Yeah.
Cardio
burns. You're running, it's mentally draining, but the people love it. And I understand because you get a certain rush of endorphins. So, yeah, guys, I think for me, it's just, yes, build the muscle, get the snatch race, but be healthy while doing it.
Of course. So all in all, just to conclude this topic, you think that Mike Mensah's theory and putting into practice, having long rest periods, short, high intensity, really straining the muscle to the point where you're fatigued it to the point where you cannot use it anymore, is the most optimal way to break the muscle down, give yourself enough time, eat, sleep.
Let it grow.
And then come back and revisit that muscle again.
Yeah. I'd probably say I agree more with him. Definitely.
Yes.
But not push the muscle to the point where you can actually injure yourself as well. That's another thing you need to take into consideration. Yeah. As much as you're doing your first set warming up, your muscle is also like, your muscles need to warm up to your second set, because your second set, you've got to push to failure.
Okay.
Your third set, I mean, you're exhausted. So it's also something you're going to need to gauge as well. But I agree with him 100%. So
I mean, Dorian Yates, to some extent, did practice what Mike Mensah preached. He did very high. Towards the end of his career, he was doing very high intensity, right?
Yeah. I'm converted now.
Okay, now that somebody else
maybe even Tlandla gets converted, yeah. he can move from men's physique,
men's physique to classic. Yeah. 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 Take off his shirt to put on.
You on classic, eh?
Yeah, I do classic.
And you
physique.
Won the classic.
Let's talk about the different categories. Yeah. Just explain all the categories and how they work and like how bodybuilding as a sport actually like what are they judging? Yeah. What are they looking at?
So I think you get four different categories in terms of the men's section, men's lineup. You get your men's physique, you get your classic physique, you get your 212. Is that for me?
No, that's for me. Oh, okay. But if you want, you can have it.
That's fine. You hijacked it. And then you get your 212, and then you get your open class, right? Uh-huh. So the difference between the different categories is that with men's physique, you want that more summer beach type of look with the chisel abs, with the good chest, with the capped shoulders, the good arms, the small waist, except you wear the board shorts, all right?
Basically, we always make fun of him and tell him he needs to train his legs.
Yeah, always.
You know, and then you get the classic physique, which is the cousin of open class, because it's like open class, but just a more smaller version of open class, because it's all about symmetry, conditioning, proportions.
And the weight difference? What's the weight difference?
So there's different weight caps based on
even
your
in
height.
Classic physique.
Even in classic. Okay. So even with myself right now, I'm 4 weeks out from my show. My weight cap is 89. At the moment, I'm 92.4. I'm not supposed to say that. In case my competition's watching.
No, don't worry. This episode will wait. We'll wait until you're done.
for me, I know I still need to lose a kilo or two, maybe like 2 weeks before my show, and then do a water drop.
So of those kilos that you're going to lose, would that be fat and water, or just how are you managing that?
So that would sort of be, I don't have much fat left. You must remember, you get your good fat and your bad fat, and your fat that the good fat that's in your organs as well, and your bad fat that is on your organs as well. So for me, it would be more like your fat that covers your good fat. I'll be losing my good fat, which sort of like protects my joints and my ligaments. That's another thing bodybuilders are aware of. As much as you're losing bad fat, there's good fat that protects your joints, your ligaments, and your muscle fibers. And
so preventing
injuries.
That's
what I start to tap into. And that's why you hear that this bodybuilder had this hamstring injury, where he tore his chest, he tore his bicep. It's because now he's tapped into a different level of training. And most importantly, his body is changing at such an extreme rate, because that's not healthy, to be quite honest. Yes, it's great to look like that, but it's also not sustainable. And that is why I tell people, be healthy, man.
Yes, be healthy.
Yes, have your chest, have your six-pack, but just be healthy.
I think one of the stories with Classic, I don't think it existed all this time. I think there was a time where like it was usually just open, right? And open got so ridiculous. They had these guys called Bubble Guts.
In the 90s it was hectic. There was a German guy, Columbo. I can't remember his name.
Columbism. Call it Columboism.
So guys were taking
growth
hormone. But
Columbo wasn't as bad as some of the guys in the 90s, because Columbo was in the same era as Arnold.
Franco
like Columbo?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Franco Colombo and Arnold were training partners together.
No,
he was much shorter.
No, you're thinking of his friend.
His other friend, his shorty friend.
The short friend, Franco Colombo, right?
Yeah, that's Franco, but not
Oh,
Columbo.
No, that's Franco Colombo. The stomach is Palumbo.
Palumbo.
Yes,
Palumbo.
Okay.
GH.
Growth hormone would make your organs
because
grow
all the
bigger.
Organs even get bigger.
You mentioned something that just picked me. You said just before your show, you need to do a water drop. Just tell us about the water drop, because that sounds scary. Man.
And in a lot of sports, they do water drops.
Yeah, 100%. So how you do a water drop based on my sport, because I know different sporting codes do it differently. So what you do is you flood your body with water, right? And you do that over a period of 4 to 5 days. With you flooding your body with water, you trick your mind into believing that, listen, I need to flush this water out. All right? So as you maybe you start on 10 liters, you drop on the third day, you go to 6 liters, the fourth day, you go to 2 liters. But in your mind, your body's like, I need to flush. And that's when you start adding water tablets or diuretics, which is really not safe. You know, because a lot of the guys who are passing on are not passing on because of performance enhancers, but it's the diuretics that they use, because it's not good for your heart. First
not
of all,
good for
you're
your
depleted,
heart, electrolytes.
You're dehydrated, you're lacking electrolytes, your body's not functioning as normal. And then you go and take a diuretic, which is putting you at so much risk.
So what actually happens, medically speaking, now is that the diuretic, when you pee, sodium follows water, potassium follows water. So when you're peeing and you're taking a diuretic, you deplete your body of potassium and sodium and then other small electrolytes as well. But potassium is the main one because it shifts in potassium, whether up or down, stop the heart.
100%.
Either you go into arrhythmias, where you get cardiac arrest and you need to be shocked, or the heart stops. And that's what we see guys collapsing on stage or dying backstage and things like that. So that's why I said it was scary when you mentioned the water drop. Yeah. So do you, how do you control it? Do you have someone helping or are you sort of well-versed in it? Yeah, what do you say?
So I've been very fortunate to not only have researched the stuff before getting into the sport at the level I'm at now, but also having consulted my doctor and also learned from different coaches and seeing what's happening out there. Guys, there's nothing more dangerous than bro science. Stay away from that. If you really want to push your physique or your body to the next level, yes, it's easy to be like, hey, try this, take this from someone, but rather speak to someone who's probably done it or who's knowledgeable, but ideally consult your doctor. Your doctor will tell you what you don't want to hear, but your bro will tell you what you want to hear.
Funny you should mention that because we actually had an endocrinologist, a specialist that specializes in hormone replacement, and he was saying in his early days when he started practicing and guys would come to him and say, I'm using this, I'm using that, he would be like, what is this?
Quietly Googling. Yes.
Because genuinely, like, even for us, now we run the Gents Clinic and we have a TRT clinic as well.
Love that. So
we help guys that have gone either, you know, down the road of using PEDs, specifically playing with their hormones. And in bodybuilding and in any other sport, when they want to use performance-enhancing drugs, it's generally along the line of anabolic steroids, which include testosterone, right?
That's probably
the male hormone that puts you through puberty and makes you strong now is going to be elevated at an exponential level. So we understand it from a medical perspective. But then we hear about some of the things, guys will come to us and say, I've been on Masteron and Deca and
Tremo.
Tremo, the most popular one. And then you're like, what?
And have you guys seen the trend now that teenagers are on trend of all things?
But let's explain that also. Because I mean, there's a lot of social media guys. Like if you think about it, like we came from the generation of Arnold, right? So it was Arnold, and we watched like Arnold's videos and documentaries, and then
who did you watch when you were growing up?
To be quite honest, I really got into the bodybuilding sport really late, but I knew about Ronnie Coleman.
Okay,
Ronnie. You know, I wasn't really into the sport, but everybody knew Ronnie because he like was the epitome of what Olympia was all about. I mean, he took it to the next level in terms of being a mass monster, but I don't aspire to look like that, to be quite honest. That is not sustainable, first of all. You have to
I mean, look at him now.
You have to train hard. It's a lot. Bro, I don't want to stress myself like that.
I mean, case in point, he can barely walk. At the moment, he's on crutches.
He's got back problems.
He's got knee problems. Yeah, it's not sustainable.
I want to give you guys in the bodybuild community some kudos. You know, I want to give you a pat on the back because it's your job, right? Maybe not yours per se, but bodybuilders, it's their job, a lot of them. And when something is your job, you need to be the best at it. And you learn your job and you read and you practice and you do things and you fail and you get back up, right? So coming to what he was saying is that sometimes doctors don't know. I want to just address, sometimes doctors don't know what you're talking about. Now, they'll say that there's bro science, right? But I want to support, not the bro science, but I want to support the research that bodybuilders do in these drugs.
It's amazing. And I mean, they test themselves. They use themselves as the test subjects.
And I like that you mentioned that. This is a secret that my lady only knows.
Yeah.
So I broke my ankle in 2014, just before the Rugby Kings got liquidated. And hey, my medical aid was gone, bro. You know what I did? Researched a drug called Deca and Sustenin.
Yes.
And I found out the healing properties that it has in terms of
joints,
recovery.
Like especially Deca.
Unbelievable.
Wow.
All right. And
that's something
like I said,
I didn't
have resources, like I said, at the time. And spoke to someone. He's like, okay, this is how it's done. This is how you can do it. And bro,
your ankle was healed. Yeah.
It took time. You must remember, it's really good for the joints.
But
the
did it require surgery? Did a doctor tell you, look, you're going to need surgery to fix this?
You know,
then you said,
so what happened was, I was supposed to have an operation. Hey, bro, funds were killing me at the time. And, you know, so I had to sort of like rely on bro science, but I had to research the bro science. Mm. And I'm here now.
So basically what I'm supporting is this. Yeah. I'm supporting the research. I want bodybuilders to continue doing research about it and not just take things and inject them.
No.
If you listen to some of these bodybuilders, it's if they went to varsity, it's like they have a degree in this thing. You know?
It's insane when I watch some of these guys talk about cycling and PCT and all of that.
DHT and, like, and DEA.
They really understand it and not just from a theoretical point of view, because they've also practically used it. I get this much water retention with this. I get this much more lean with that. And then they can also say, but when one of my clients also used it, who was maybe more of an endomorph, then they look like this.
Mm.
So it's very interesting, like the almost the studies, the you know, play studies that they've done and they've conducted, and their observational wealth of knowledge is insane.
Sure.
Would you, do you have some experience in it? And the reason I'm asking this is because when would you allow, let's say you were my trainer, and I feel that I've plateaued, you know, and I come to you and I say, coach, I want to try something, man.
Okay.
You know, when would you allow me? Obviously, it's my decision.
Of course.
I'm an adult. I consent. I'm, you know, I have my own autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't help me, I'm going to go somewhere else, you know, and I trust in you as my coach.
Of course.
When would you allow and say, okay, look, I understand why you've made this decision. And when would you say, whoa, don't do this. Let's still push X, Y, Z.
So, guys, first and foremost, we're not promoting PEDs. Yes, let's get that clear. We're just talking about the risks involved with PEDs and the benefits
and
of it. So it's very important that one researches and understands what they're getting themselves into when it comes to that world.
Yes.
And thanks for your question. So, for me, I usually ask a client, have you literally tried everything in your ability to try and get to where you are? Have you dieted? Have you trained? Have you, have you taken the necessary steps to achieve whatever you're trying to achieve? And it's either yes or no. And I'm like, okay, if you want to go this route, that's fine.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. When you say yes or no, do you give them, like, have you done this for this amount of time or this, you know, because someone can say, yeah, I dieted for 2 weeks and it's not working, so I'm going to try this. Is there like a time frame that you also consider? Like, I've been doing this for 10 years.
Is an
age also a factor? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I've been training for 10 years and I've been doing this, you know, diet for like a year solid. And this is the best it gets. Like, I can show you my calorie intake. I can show you that I'm tracking.
Yeah.
You know, I'm showing you that I'm here. I'm showing up to work out with you every day. But I'm just not getting to that next level. Is there like a time frame that you use?
So there is a time frame because you look at that person's experience, number one. How long have they been training for?
Mm.
Number two, in terms of the potential PEDs, have they used it before? Have they not? And this is where it gets really interesting because this is where I'd be like, okay, when was the last time you did bloods? Because as much as you want to look a certain way, you need to understand what's happening in your body. Go do blood tests. And you find that a lot of males, they either suffer from low testosterone or thyroid issues. Mm. You know, that's like a big thing that is not spoken about. Thyroid is like so hectic. And get to know what's happening in your body with your bloods, because you might find that you have a hidden condition sort of like delays
hinders
your growth or anything like that. And then from there, speak to your doctor and be like, okay, doc, this is what I'd like to do. And I love what's happening right now in the medical field where TRT is like literally not endorsed, but it's like, you know what, it's going to help you.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It's going to give you that.
It's seen as something that's going to bring you back to who you know you are.
100%.
It's going to be something that we now accept and understand.
Mm.
Yeah. And you guys understood it before. And, you know, often patients understand their bodies better. Like, I need testosterone. Mm. And that's why we're in the locker with the doctor.
Yeah.
Now, it's good that, I mean, we opened the gentleman's clinic partly because of this. We realized that it's actually a disservice to humanity. To man.
And that's whether you've used PEDs before, whether you haven't. we genuinely care that men become men again.
Yeah.
We genuinely care that society has disregarded men's health for such a long time, and it's something so important.
Mm.
Forget giving someone testosterone. Forget giving them a medication that's going to fix them.
Yeah.
Guys like you understand the value that is instilled in a man when he gets up every day and he has a purpose.
Yes.
Like, he can get up and he can get to the gym and he can sweat and he can break himself down to build himself up.
Of course.
And I feel like that is the purpose behind what we
That is the purpose, yes. Yes.
And I mean, the beauty about that as well, those traits and characteristics are not just limited to training. It's traits and characteristics you can take into business. Yeah. Traits and characteristics you can take into building certain relationships.
Mm.
Discipline is not just limited to training. Mm. I mean, it's a part of who you are. And the more you realize that, you know, as a person, you can sort of expand, not just from a training point of view, you'd be successful.
Like, there's stories of guys who like, they were wanting to stop their business, they were getting old, they wanted to, like, retire. They experience low energy, low libido. They go on TRT and then they rebuild their business.
My uncle right now is 62.
Yeah.
He's like a real hands-on man. Does welding, he changes car engines, and
he's builds, a man's man.
He builds gates, you know, he builds cylinders, everything. He was telling me, he's thinking of retiring end of this year and what. I spoke to him. He says, no, I'm gaining weight. My joints, when I get out the car, it's tough. I said, no, let's go do bloods. Done bloods. Started him on therapeutic doses of TRT. He doesn't want to retire now. He says, no, I'm going for another 4 or 5 years if this is the way I feel. Amazing. Them carbs going down, you know? And why? We had the endocrinologist here said that there's actually no studies that show that a man's testosterone is supposed to drop as you age. Usually it drops because there's something else going on. Yeah. Diabetes, arthritis, you retire. So it's actually true when our fathers say that, hey, I'm not retiring, do you want me to die? I'm going to keep working because if I stop working, I'm going to die. I think it's that. You know, I'm just thinking now anecdotally. I'm not saying this is research or anything. But men are meant to be always on the go. And if you're not on the go, it doesn't mean you lose your vitality and you must just become a slouch in the house and, you know, wait until your nappies need to be changed. No.
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't need to be like that.
And there's also something I wanted to ask. Like, there's an idea called fitness inflation, right? Okay. So back in the day, like, Superman used to be like a mid-physique, let's say. Superman's physique was attainable, right? Nowadays, like, Superman is like a super jacked guy on steroids, right? Yeah. You even see it in action figures.
Yeah, of course.
The guys were like normal, and then now all of a sudden they're like muscles are touching their chin or something hectic. So what do you think of like nowadays we see it a lot, and that's why like a lot of teenagers are also going
social
on steroids.
Media, yeah.
But in social media, like, there's a guy, like social media guy called Alex Eubank and these other guys who are now coming out and saying, look, I'm going on TRT. And all these teenagers are following and saying, I might as well also go on
Trend
on
twins.
Test.
For me, I think just the narrative of what it means to be a man is kind of misconstrued at times, you know? And being a man is not just being muscular and strong, you know? Mm. It starts from you as a person, knowing who you are as a person, you know? Being confident.
I know that's
to hear that from you is very inspiring.
Bro, I've been broken down in life. I've had to overcome obstacles. Mm. And that has built me.
Mm.
And that is why in terms of my line of work, I'm so passionate and I'm always willing to listen because people go through different things but overcome them differently. And at the moment, I feel like at this point in time in my life, nothing can break me because I've been broken. Mm. The only thing that can happen for me now is just growth. So as I was saying, you need to know who you are as a person, and with you knowing who you are, you establish what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, how you can grow your weaknesses just as much as you're building your strengths. And then with the physical side of things, how can you better yourself as a man? Groom yourself. Look after your skin. Guys, do your nails. There's nothing wrong. Start looking after yourself physically, you know, and as you get better, then you'll be like, okay, you know what? Now I'm at a level where I can maybe look at TRT, take yourself to the next level. It's all about just bettering yourself. Yes. Because as men, to be quite honest, bro, we just taught to work and not feel emotions and not feel pain. And it's a little bit unfair, man. I think the mental challenges that comes with the emotional challenges and not knowing who to talk to and how to express yourself is probably like the most difficult thing. And a lot of men are dying in silence, bro. Bro, I know a lot of successful people who have everything, have the world at their feet, but they're battling with personal issues. Mm. Who, for a person like myself, it's like, wow, I would have never thought. Mm. You know, so it's very important to know yourself as a man and understand what it is you bring to the table or how you make the world a better place. That's the best way to do it.
100%.
You know? I love that you put it that way, and I don't want to take anything from it. But
But one would assume that you would be an advocate for just get big muscles and you'll be happy.
And like, they think that's what we are advocate for at James Clinic.
They think that
we're going to give you TRT or treat your erections so that you can just run around and be sexual and you know sleep with many women. It's not. It's everything that you just described. We just want you to be positive. Masculinity is what society needs. It's is what society needs. But speaking about sex, man. Obviously, we know as doctors the benefits of what exercise and being healthy has in the bedroom. What, perhaps from personal experience?
apart from just exercise, but so we know that the PEDs also do
this,
that.
I love this question. Yeah. So I think the most controversial question is when you take steroids, your penis becomes small. Let me explain to you what a penis is. A penis is a tissue. This is me putting on my
Dr. Bonoko,
right? So whatever you have, you have.
Yes.
It's not going to get bigger or get smaller. But however, what will happen is because you're putting in artificial testosterone in your body, your natural testosterone will shut down. So your testicles will be like, listen, I'm getting excess testosterone, so I don't need to produce anymore. So that's what they mean when they say your penis is getting
full. Your
testicles shrink.
Yes.
Not your penis.
Yes.
All right, so... I've been dying to say that all my life. Not that I'm using the right anything, place. But it's amazing. And that's the beauty about research, you know? Mm. And I love what you guys are doing in terms of...
Wait, are you talking theoretical or practical?
Theoretical. So...
But my question was...
Yeah, specifically, I think more on the libido side.
Mine was because I'll give you... Okay, let me tell you my experience now. I'm on and off in the gym, right? Obviously, we have a very close friend who gyms daily and he influences us positively to gym. We've picked up gym. So we're on and off, right? But there are times when I'm on, like 6 months straight in the gym, and you'll be wearing tights. And then after your gym session, where you're so pumped and you feel so good, like...
Semen.
It will just rub against your...
What?
No, listen, because like, you must remember, I speak to my clients, you know, some clients who train really hard, sometimes you find that you'd leak a bit of semen.
What?
Bro, it sounds crazy.
Like pre-cum.
Not pre-cum. Pre-cum is like when you're getting aroused and then your body releases
actual
a bit of semen.
Like ejaculate.
Guys, is that not drop?
Bro,
it's semen.
The stuff I see as a trainer is unbelievable. And that's why I feel like I have a big responsibility to not only society, but men as well.
Okay.
You know, I help men understand, listen, this is what's happening. This is what you need to do. And that is why I always say, go to your doctor. Bro, I don't know it all, but... the little that I can share, I always say, go to your doctor.
Mm.
And guys, you mustn't think that, you know, doctors need to know it all. We can all learn together.
True.
But
true.
Ideally, the best and safest way to do things is to see.
I mean, that's what we do. We're also learning.
I mean, like,
what I was saying is that when I'm gymming, a slightest movement of my penis on my tights, all of a sudden...
You are healthy, the blood is flowing.
So that's what I want to get. What are the sexual benefits of staying healthy? You know, in terms
And was there a time in your life where maybe you weren't as active or like injuries or whatever, and then you're not... Did it affect your bedroom?
Okay, and I'll just quantify it. Is it like time-wise, performance-wise?
Libido-wise, like just the desire?
Yeah.
So, myself, naturally, I'm a very... I need to look for the right word to say.
Speak your mind.
You know, I'm a very... Yeah. Sexually liberated person. You're, and I don't battle when it comes to that side of things, because I understand my mind, I understand my body, and I surely should understand what's happening down there, right? Yeah. Unfortunately, as men, I don't feel like we've really been guided enough to sort of like understand what our capabilities are and what our limits are. And that is why you find that there are some people out there, I don't want to call out the opposite sex, but they're telling us how we should feel or how we should perform or how we should do things, you know? And I feel like it's really unfair because we are the ones
in control.
100%, you know? And yeah, man, it gets really interesting. But for me, exercise has really helped me a lot, bro.
And in the times when you weren't, what did you experience in those times? Sexually, I'm just being sexually.
Let me give you an example while you think. I was sprinting in high school. I sprinted into university. Probably my third year in varsity, I stopped sprinting. A few years later, I realized when my girlfriend went home, the next morning my legs, I couldn't walk. I was like, hell no. Now I need to get into the gym.
Yeah.
Because now I'm suffering from bedroom exercise, where I never suffered from, you know, DOMS from bedroom exercise. Hi, bro. You know? Then I decided, no, I need to get... And when you're in the gym, you don't suffer from those things. You can do what Johnson's things you want to do in the bedroom, and you won't feel pains. You'll be, you know, good.
But also, like, physiologically, right? So, I mean, you get, like, increased nitric oxide, right?
Nitric oxide.
Yeah, and also you get, like... Like that pump that you get in the gym, you also get in your penis, right? So you get improved. Seriously, like you get improved penis.
But I guess, that's what I describe. And for me, I noticed that the sweat even slides, man, and then it's
what the hell?
I think what you're also saying is that there's a difference between being aroused and getting the nitric oxide flowing. That's what we also need to understand as well.
Because
even with my lady, when you wake up in the morning, it doesn't mean you are aroused as a man. Your thing just stands up. It means you're healthy, you've recovered, your body's produced
natural and your testosterone is peaking hormone. In the morning.
The testosterone is peaking, and that is why they say, ladies, if you want your man to be happy, the morning wood is the best, you know? So it doesn't mean, and sometimes as a man, you could be working and your thing stands up. It doesn't mean you are aroused. That's a big misconception.
Yes.
It just means 100%. You are healthy and you are active man. Even with myself, I'll be busy training a client, and the client will be like, and I'm like,
I think it's more it's difficult like, to explain in that setting now.
You know, because my lady used to think I was ready all the time.
It's not. It's healthy. Really,
it's just there. You know, so people need to understand there's blood flow and there's being aroused.
Yes.
100%.
It's two different things.
100%. Sure. I feel like we should just give you the doctor right now. I mean.
Well, this is just research and opening myself up to learning. But most importantly, just like I said, wanting to leave the world a better place. I wish I knew a little bit more of this growing up. I still feel like there's still a lot more we're going to grow and learn and achieve, you know, as men. Like, we are so powerful, bro. But I feel like we don't get the acknowledgement, that respect that we deserve. And that's why I appreciate what you guys are doing. Even before I came here, guys, I actually was following your the podcast. I think... your clinic or something. You guys have it on Instagram?
The Jens Clinic,
you guys talk, and I was like, wow, man, this is different. It's so authentic. It's so relatable. And guys, we shouldn't shy away from talking about these things.
No,
it doesn't make you less of a man.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Look, I think, Ofense, you've been put in the right place, you know. You said you went through a lot in your life and you've emerged, you know. Today, your profession, you push 100%. Your bodybuilding, you push... Your business, you push, and you give 100% to it. I mean, I admire, like you said, I was a year his senior, but I admired him at high school, you know. He could have been the most arrogant person. He was muscular even in high school. He sprinted, you know, he played first team rugby, but he was humble, you know. He would give you that advice, he would speak to you nicely, you know. And you actually look up to him, though he's a year below you, and you're like, you know, this is my brother, you know. So I think the Lord has put you in the best place for your life, Ofense, and to, like you say, to make the world a better place, man. I think your purpose in that is really being attained.
I think just before we wrap, so we've talked about exercise and we understand your theories align somewhat with Nassim. the recovery as well, the importance of sleep and just taking rest so that your body can recover. But one thing that we didn't touch on that Nhlanhla always talks about is the importance of diet and how he feels like there are people, like I've been through a gym session with him. I know how intense it is, but I can keep up.
Of course.
To some extent, I can keep up with him. But I cannot keep up with the discipline of his diet. I remember one time we were sitting and having breakfast. All of us just chatting. Went out for breakfast. Chatting, having a good laugh. And his friend KK calls him.
Yeah, KK.
You know KK. Yeah. So his friend KK calls him and tells him, listen, 6 weeks' time is a competition. You're doing it. Yeah. And he's like, ah, oh, come on. I don't really know. I'm telling you, you're doing it. He's like, okay, fine, I'm doing it. Puts the phone down and he tells him, sorry, change my order. I'm having salmon and salad. Yeah. And I was like, that is insane level of discipline. Yeah. He left that breakfast and did cardio. And from that day until he competed, he was strict, 100% on his diet.
And then he wins or comes in top three. When he,
and then you're like, how the hell do you do this without any sleep? You're working nights. It's insane. But I think the most important thing that he ever imparted on me was the importance of diet. What do you think?
I totally agree with him. I think as humans, what we also need to understand is that we eat for convenience and we mostly eat because of stressful conditions. And that is why it's so difficult to sort of have a balanced diet. Because if I'm working a stressful job, for example, if I'm traveling, I'm not going to still worry about packing lunch. I'm going to go buy a burger, eat it, and I'm gone. I go about my day. So the importance of having a balanced yet strict diet is what's going to set you apart from a lot of people, whether it's your mental state, your emotional state, but most importantly, how your body responds on how you look physically. So it's not something that should be taken lightly. And unfortunately, like I said, we eat for convenience more than anything.
What diet do you specifically follow? And then do you tailor make your diets to body shapes, types, that type of thing?
So for me, I try and understand what the client's goal is. But in terms of my diet, I weigh my food, bro. Whether it's my eggs in the morning, I need to have a certain milliliters amount of eggs, or if I need to have a certain amount of steak or chicken, I weigh my food. And I think
everything
consistently doing that is what's going to yield results, no doubt.
It becomes a norm in your life. It's
boring. It's boring. But if you want to have a certain outcome, you want to look a certain way, unfortunately, you have to sacrifice.
But at your level, you have to weigh it and calculate it. But an average person, what would you suggest?
Whew, that's a good question, because every person is different. But I'm trying to keep it as simple and as basic. Don't skip breakfast. Let me start there. People think starving yourself is going to help.
So you're not a fan of fasting or doing any sort of intermittent fasting?
There's nothing wrong with fasting. I mean, the health benefits to fasting, but if you don't have to put your body through that and still attain a certain look, don't skip breakfast.
The sustainability.
Yes, of course, because your body needs to function on something. So keep it simple, bro.
What I, you know, advise patients who want to go the diet way as a starter, because it's difficult to diet. Whether you start with a plan, is cut out processed foods and cut out bad starches. So bad starches, your slop chips, you know, Simba chips, the things that you just pick up easy, you know, the Russians. And if you can start with processed, anything that's mashed together, anything that is not pure, cut off the animal
not
or taken
one
off the tree.
Yeah.
You know, start with those. Eat everything else. Everything else. Just leave those things. That's a perfect place to start. Weight benefits and great cardiovascular. Do you know certain Russians and Viennas are banned in Italy and in France? I think France as well, because they have carcinogens in them. Cancer-causing chemicals. Banned, like Viennas. In Italy and in
Holland. And we're here like, oh, Gota Sundays.
Gota, you see, Escort Palloni. You know? So, we really need to be aware of this. But you saw even the master was stumped at the diet, because it's not a simple thing. It's not
But what's your advice?
It needs to be individualized.
First, like individualized, I know you obviously weigh yours, because you've got to manage not just your calories, probably sodium intake, you know, because salt can relate to water retention and those types of things. But for someone that's starting, let's say maybe on the endomorph side and then the ectomorph side, how do you advise them and how do you grow their diet? So like start them off simple and then get them more disciplined. How do you do that?
So what I would probably say is, listen, if you don't know what you're doing, go speak to a dietitian.
Yeah.
They'll probably know better because they deal with different body types on a daily. But from my side as a professional, I always say, keep your breakfast simple, have a little bit of carbs with more protein, all right? Because, I mean, the carbs are just there to give you fuel because you're going to be active the whole day, all right? Lunchtime, maybe have something that's more like a salad and a protein. You're going to hear me say protein a lot because that's like the building block in terms of muscle. You want the carbs in, yes, but I mean, having excessive carbs or being in a calorie surplus is what's going to cause you to gain weight. And that's not what you want. You'd rather gain muscle, all right? And then maybe later towards the evening, I mean, have a little bit of carbs, just not too much because you're going to go to bed. So your body won't be able to break it down or digest it easily. So, yeah.
Protein as well.
Protein as well, please. Protein.
So 3 meals a day.
Meals to be safe, but ideally 4. And small portions. Guys, portion control is a big thing. Yes, you feel good this morning. You don't want to eat much. Later, you don't feel so great. You want to stuff yourself. Portion control is probably like the biggest factor. Forget the whole food thing. Portion control.
Do you feel like that ramps up your metabolism the more times in the day that you eat?
Yeah, definitely, especially if you're eating small portions, because your body is like a fire. And this is how I like to explain what your metabolism does. If you want to put your body in a fat burning state, or you want your body's metabolism to fire, you need to keep feeding it throughout the day. It's like starting a bonfire and expecting it to burn over 4 days, but only putting wood in there once. It's not going to burn over 4 days, but if I'm constantly going to put in wood, it's going to burn, it's going to burn, it's going to burn. And that's how your metabolism fires.
But then in that same, if you use that same theory, let's say, for example, he wants to gain weight. Should he not stop eating that many times a day and eat one massive meal at night?
He like needs to just increase his portions. As much as eating 4 times a day, just increase his portions. Because he's a slimmer guy trying to put on weight, but also put on good weight. Yeah. Remember that. Put on good
weight. What I advise to people not trying to lose weight, but trying to maintain and not gain, is that when you're eating, when you feel that sense, when your brain tells you, yeah, there's food now in my stomach, that's when you should stop. Don't stop when you full.
Yeah, like when your gut is busting and you.
When you realize that there's food there, because you never realize there's food. Right now, there's food in our stomachs. We don't know. When you eat and you there's something that tells you, I can feel food there, that's when you should stop. But we don't. We continue. And what's next? And what's for for dessert and so forth? Yeah.
Anyone have any other questions? I have one final one for Fetze.
Let's have a comment. It's just about also calories, right? So you need to work out how much your basal metabolic rate is, right? And then you need to go in a calorie surplus if you want to gain weight, calorie deficit if you want to lose weight. You don't need a lot of calories to be in surplus. Like 200 or 300 calories, you'll gain muscle. It's simple like that.
You mean 200 above
your
maintenance. Brendan, any last questions, comments?
Nothing from
the last thing I just wanted to ask you briefly before we wrap up is, a lot of the time people think that people who are in the fitness world are very disciplined, rigid. They never have fun. They never have a day off. They never have a cheat meal. They never, you know, it's this idea that if in order to attain that level of physique and maintain it for long periods of time, you can never enjoy yourself. Meaning you can't go out to a party and have a drink with your friend. You can't have a cheat meal. Your life's boring. What do you think about that?
I think, you know, an aspect of your life does suffer and your social life does take a bit of a knock, because if I'm working towards a show in 8 weeks' time, what I used to do prior to the 8 weeks is not something I can carry out through 8 weeks. For example, going out partying and not getting enough sleep, that's not something that's going to help me during the 8 week period. So your social life does take a bit of a back foot, but you as a person, you need to understand, as much as it's taking a back foot, you need to try and balance it at the same time, because bodybuilding can be lonely, guys. It's a lonely sport because people don't understand you. You seem like you're moody most of the time. You seem like
you probably are moody. You haven't
eaten. You probably seem like you're a fussy eater. But you know, I think we also have a responsibility to sort of like equip people with the knowledge of, if I'm doing a show, this is what I'm going to be going through. This is what I need to do. This is what I need to acquire over a certain period to get to a certain level. And for me, it's something that I feel like,
what are your practical steps? What do you do to try and balance that? So do you go out and maybe order something?
For me, just to while you're thinking, I tell the clients that we have, you know, every second week or so, have a cheat meal. If your family comes with pizzas and you haven't had a cheat meal in a week or two, have a few slices with them. And what you actually find that when you are a bodybuilder, or when you work out, when you are healthy, if you are running cardio, you just keep healthy, your body can actually deal with that extra calories in the cheat meal much better, you know? And you won't even pick it up. Mm-hmm. It'll just burn off, you know? So it's very good for your mental health as well, because you'll get people coming, my family went out, I have to eat salads. And no, dwell in there, you know?
So how do you balance? Yeah.
So for me, especially when I go out, I try and stick as close to my diet as possible. Yeah. So, for example, yesterday we had lunch at Tasha's, and I asked them, do they have fish? And they were like, yes, we have fish. We've got king clip. And I said, okay, can you grill it for me? And they were like, yes. And now I got a little bit complicated, and I was like, can I have 150 grams? Can you wait for me? You know? And they were like, no, we don't have to do that for you. And then they brought me a salad, and the salad was drenched in lemon cider vinegar. There's actually a lemon something to lemon, not apple cider or anything. And I was like, this looks like, oh, they were like, no, it's lemon or whatever. And I was like, and then I had to go into Google, check how many calories it's got. And I enjoyed the salad. So it doesn't have to be boring, but I know what I need to do in the next couple of weeks. So I have that responsibility. I've invested so much time, money, effort, and resources into making sure that my journey to where I need to be for the show is successful. So I can't mess that up. Mm.
100%. Thank you so much. I think we now shall give you the title of Dr. Ovense Boloko.
Yeah.
We are really thrilled with this episode. I'm sure we're going to have you back on again. Thank you all for tuning in and watching another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. Coming up on the show next week is Sivengesi, an actor and a influencer, which most of you guys know. So don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to Let's Talk Man and The Real Network. That's me, Sohail Essa, signing off.
Dr. Brendan Matthews, out.
Dr. Naseem Sharif.
Ovense Boloko.
Dr. Ovense Boloko.
I'll take that.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. And we'll see you next week.